Good morning. Today is Friday, October the 8th. Joining us this morning is Assistant Humble Bay Fire Chief Billy Reynolds. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So somebody's out grilling hot dogs already?
I don't know about that.
Getting the popcorn machine going? He's not ducking.
No. He's other commitments.
The weekends of activities.
Absolutely.
Okay. So he will be around.
Absolutely.
Good. But this allows us to talk about him if we so are so inclined. You ready for your question this morning?
Anytime.
All right. Why is extorted money called blackmail?
Oof. Good question. I do not know.
When the English owned much of the farmland in Scotland, they charged the Scottish farmers rent, called mail, from a Scottish word meaning rent or taxes. Payments were normally made in silver, and this was called white mail.
Okay.
When a farmer couldn't raise the silver, the payment had to be made in produce or in product. This was called blackmail.
Okay.
On the threat of eviction, some landlords demanded much more produce than was actually needed to cover the rent, and this gave the term blackmail its present negative connotation.
See, I would have gone thinking that the armor, maybe the chain mail that the tax collector wore was black, so, yeah.
Like what, rusted?
Yeah. So the direction I would have gone, but.
That's rusty nail, and that's a drink, I believe. Whole different ballgame there.
Absolutely.
So is everybody home from the fires?
Currently, yes. Yeah, right now all of our units are home. We spent a lot of time on the Dixie Fire this year with an engine over there and then also covering Cal Fire stations. But current status is all of our units are home. But you know, the misnomer is a lot of people think as it starts cooling off and we start seeing a little bit of rain that the fire season's over. And some of the worst fires we've seen have been in October and later in the season. So we're still in the thick of it. So there's still potential for more. But knock on wood, hopefully we're going to be home for a while.
So what the troops think about the Dixie Fire? I'm sure everybody has stories.
Right. A lot of hurry up and wait, obviously. At one point, they were on the Dixie Fire, and the Caldor Fire popped up, and they were dispatched. You know, the engine was taken off of the Dixie Fire and dispatched to the Caldor Fire. And as they got spun up and ready to go ahead for that, they got canceled and basically held back on the Dixie Fire because the Dixie Fire was blowing up. So again, a lot of hurry up and wait and a lot of, a lot of things like that. But for the most part, you know, they'd had a lot of good assignments and felt like they were able to do a lot of good. So
when they come back, whoever they are that gets sent out.
Right.
I would think there's a mixed bag of experience. There's the actual firefighting, but also then seeing how different commands operate, how they interact with different jurisdictions.
Absolutely.
Community involvement, all that kind of stuff. Learning opportunities. Do they bring that stuff back? Are you guys able to incorporate those things, even though that's a wildland fire versus the more urban that you guys primarily
right.
are?
Yeah, the learning experiences are one of the best parts about going. That's when, you know, the crews, they like to go out and do the, you know, the exciting stuff, but, you know, but as far as going out and seeing things that they don't see every day, you know, obviously with the municipal fire department, our primary focus is on the medical aids that we run and also on the fires here in town, but to take personnel that don't see that stuff every day and go out and see different country, different weather patterns and whatnot, that's a huge learning experience. You know, come from the coastal environment to the interior of California where it's triple digits every day and
and night.
Oh, absolutely. And so they bring a lot of that home, and that experience is so invaluable because you can't teach that stuff. That's stuff that's not in the books.
Do you debrief them? Or is there protocols when they come back?
We actually do debrief with them, and we find out basically what went well, what didn't go well, what equipment worked well, what should we add to our engine when we take it over there, or what was used and what was not necessary and everything. So it's not necessarily a formal process, but there is definitely an informal debrief where the guys are able to come home and say, this worked great, we should do this again, or this didn't work great, we need to evaluate this and see what we can do differently. So,
what about different pieces of equipment that's used? Is it the same as we would see, you know, pick a truck in one of the stations now, we look at it, and that's pretty much where it's over there? Or are there different pieces of gear that are utilized in a scenario like that with a large fire
right. That's
out in the boonies?
There is a lot of different equipment. The fire engine itself is different. We use our Type 3 fire engine, which is a smaller wheelbase, four-wheel drive unit that has more capability of in those environments to get around and whatnot. Smaller, so it's actually able to fit in different spaces and everything. But then there's also mobile equipment on the engines, the portable equipment, like portable pumps. That's not something we use on a structure fire here in town.
A portable pump? They like throw it on their back kind of thing? Or does it have wheels and you...
There's backpack pumps that we use that, you know, basically go out and mop up things, but there's also portable pumps in respect of something we can put in the swimming pool or put in a body of water that basically is gas powered, so it'll basically, we can use it to either fill our tank on the fire engine or to fight fire in that respect too.
Kind of like a sump pump then.
Yeah, absolutely. So
certainly a little bit more strong than what we see on the shelves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something we can use to fight fire or fill a water tank on a fire engine if need be, if water is in short supply. So.
Now, is that the same type of unit that you'll use on the fireboat?
To
bring water up if you're on a wharf, or not on the wharf, adjacent to a wharf fire?
It could be used in that respect. We typically don't, because we do have the fireboat that has its own pump that can pump to units on the shore, or it can basically supply itself for the firefighting effort. So, but you know, the portable pumps and everything aren't stuff that we use every day. You know, obviously we use on the wildland fires, and it's good to be familiar with those as well. So,
well, don't forget about the cool sunglasses.
Oh yeah, well the sunglasses, you got to look good while you're doing the job, you know. So.
What is the follow-up from the incident command, something like that? Will they reach out to the folks from all the various departments and say, okay, give us some intelligence, give us some feedback, let us know what worked for you, what didn't work for you? Is there that kind of follow-up?
There is. They're basically, every time our crews go out on an assignment, whether they're covering a station for Cal Fire or go on a big fire like the Dixie Fire, they do get evaluated. And they basically get a report back, and we get a report back on how the crew did. And if there are areas of improvement, if there's areas of training that we can address with them, saying, hey, your guys were a little bit weaker in this area, they should follow up there. You know, a mark of pride for us is we usually get really high marks. Our people do a really good job. There's always areas for improvement too, but our you know, our folks are really well versed in what they're doing out there, and we get positive feedback on a regular basis.
So you get their job performance review, but will the commander or whoever is in charge of this stuff reach out and say, okay, guys, what do you think we could do better?
Yeah, both formally and informally.
It
goes both ways. And typically, you know, when our units are assigned to something, they have a strike team leader or a task force leader they're working for, and they're able to give that feedback to them.
Loops of 360 degrees.
Yes.
What a concept. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humboldt Bay Fire. One of the challenges I think that a lot of folks don't understand is some of what you guys and gals deal with. You know, I know, you know, you're going to be sharing some of that stuff later in the show, but also tomorrow is part of the open house stuff. You often will reference, or folks will often reference, the medical aides. What percent of the hours, not responses, because, you know, if you've got everybody tied up for a day and a half on a fire, that counts as one. You have 15 medical aides this hour, that counts as 15, but the time impact obviously is significantly different to staff. On a hourly basis or on a time basis, how much is fire? How much is education or prevention? How much is medical?
Geez, that's hard to say, because with the actual incident response, you also have to group in, you know, training as well. And we have so many training requirements for our EMTs and paramedics that, you know, they have to remain current on our certifications, obviously. And not only with the EMT certification, then you have CPR training, which is separate. Then you have, you know, for the paramedics, it's so much more because they have, you know, the IVs that they do and the drugs that they're able to administer and the other special procedures they can do. So, man, it's, you know, a good working fire will take up, you know, it's one incident, but it'll take up anywhere from 2 to 4 to even more hours than that. Whereas a medical aid, you know, we run so many, 60% of our calls, 60 to 65% are medical aids. You factor that at basically say, you know, anywhere from a half an hour for a minor medical aid to an hour, hour and a half for a more major medical aid involving, say, extrication. Man, it's really hard to put a number, an actual hour number on those hours that we spend on those.
Yeah, I think that might give the funders, i.e. taxpayers,
right,
and the city council and the board a better sense of what's going on. You know, maybe you have training broken out as a separate category also, and say this is where the hours get allocated each year on a, you know, maybe a rolling 3-year average or something like that, because I don't think we really have a sense.
Yeah, and we, with our incident reporting software, we can pull those numbers out and we can look at it. And, you know, and we do tend to, you know, err more on the side of saying we went on X amount of incidents per year. But I think you're right in the respect that, you know, the amount of time on each of those incidents, and not only that, but then you have multiple incidents running at once. You have one engine on a medical over here, another engine on a fire call over here. And it, again, that's all that's a really good number to look at. So
I could see a real simple pie chart, you know, however many tens of thousands of hours a year. And just how is it allocated and the other stuff, and put down barbecue or relaxing or sleeping or whatever, you know, the folks do there if they're not running and doing. But that visual, I think, would help us to kind of recognize what is going on.
Right. And I think you're right. And I also think in the respect that you mentioned, you know, prevention activities, going out doing inspections on businesses and whatnot, or in my position, you know, interacting with contractors who are building a new building in town, and basically the downtime we have doing inspections, getting a building ready to go so it's safe to occupy. Going out and doing community education, you know, whether it's teaching CPR or whether it's going out and, you know, going to the school and doing stop, drop, and roll. You know, it's, you know, there's so many hours in the day.
Chop?
What's that?
Did you say chop and roll?
Stop, drop, and roll.
Oh, I thought it was stuff, chop, and you're the roll. Okay.
That's cooking and eating.
Yeah, yeah, I was a whole different part of the house on that one. Yeah, and listening skills, too.
Well, there's that.
Well, and, you know, with that, I think then when it comes to dollar time, we kind of get a better sense. With a medical aids, what's the number one within that category that you respond to? Is it the heart attack? Is it the slip and fall?
You know, I think it's a combination thereof. Obviously, with an aging community and with a lot of older folks in our community, we do see a lot of the cardiac issues, heart and whatnot. Probably the number one, if you go classify it by the type we're dispatched to, difficulty breathing is the biggest catch-all that we go to. But
is that like drugs?
Well, I was going to say, with difficulty breathing, that could be, we could get there and the person's having a heart attack, or we could get there and it's a gunshot wound. They're having difficulty breathing because it's a gunshot wound, you know. And you do throw overdoses and you know, substance abuse related issues into those as well. But that's just kind of a general category that we go to. And then when we get there, obviously the EMTs and paramedics that are running the calls, they've got to narrow it down. And so it's when we're dispatched to a difficulty breathing call, we know that we could be going to just about anything. But a lot of times we do get the specific, you know, you're dispatched to a gunshot wound, or you're dispatched to a traffic collision with injuries, and you can kind of, you have an idea of what you're going to be dealing with when you get there. But
that's what I would think, the more general, the okay, maybe more dynamic for you, but it's really nothing you can prep before on the drive out.
Yeah, day one in rookie school, the biggest thing they say is expect the unexpected. And, you know, and we get out there.
That's life, dude.
Yeah, that
and
exactly.
Apparently near life also.
Absolutely.
Some of this stuff. Yeah, no kidding. Well, let me ask you, boy, all these weird questions that,
fine,
you know, a couple years ago was all you, and now it's, of the responses that you guys run on that are not fire, okay? How many are involving cops alongside versus how many are the ambulance crews alongside?
Well, all the medical calls are going to have an ambulance crew, obviously. And depending on the type of incident, it's hard to put a number on the amount that's involved law enforcement. But, 3 to 4 a day, I'd say, at least the police are there.
And really, that many?
Especially now that they're carrying Narcan. They are able to get there and administer that.
And help everybody out, yeah. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. So, open house weekend.
It is, but it's a little different.
So to speak.
This year. Yeah, so to speak.
How about the door is cracked open house week?
That's a better description of it.
All right. So, what are the plans for tomorrow's activities?
So we've actually there is no open house this year again because of obviously the things going on in the world right now with the pandemic and everything, but all week we've basically been hosting events, smaller events all week at our stations, a coloring contest for the kids. There was a window they could come into the station on Tuesday and got their picture taken with Sparky the fire dog, one of our people in the Sparky costume and everything, and we've been doing a lot on social media,
which is really weird that you would name a character from a fire department representing as Sparky. It would be like Fire Dog or Ars Ron.
Right.
Yeah. How about like Pumper or something like that?
Yeah, there you go.
Might be a little bit more on the reactive rather than the proactive. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I guess what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. So Sparky was there.
Yeah, Sparky was there. And also a lot on social media. You know, social media, whether you love it or hate it, is a really good tool for us to get the word out to people. And each of our engine companies and on-duty crews have been doing social media takeovers where they're able to demonstrate different things they're doing during the day to kind of show obviously what our job is like and what it's like living in the firehouse or going on calls and whatnot. And so it's you know, and there's also been a couple other things that have been really interesting. Our CERT team did an online webinar basically getting prepared for community emergencies and everything. And they did there's been a couple giveaways, even to the point of giving away a generator for emergency preparation. So there's, you know, it's obviously not as fun as the open house, but we're doing our best, and hopefully next year we can get back to normal and get back to doing the open house.
Or maybe there's an open house when things loosen up a little bit and it's not connected to any fire in the Midwest.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. You know, last year we did basically mini open.
I think I just heard Amy say, yeah, that's a great idea.
and credit to Amy for the activities this year. She's really been the spearhead on basically organizing and being creative with, if we can't do the open house, what can we do to get the message out to people as far as the Fire Prevention Week? So
tomorrow, is there anything planned along that line?
Nothing really planned for tomorrow. Tomorrow would be the normal day that we do the open house, but we're hoping that the things this week have helped kind of fill in those gaps to basically, you know, do the lead up to that. So
no showing of senior management running up and down the stairs?
Nothing like that tomorrow, no.
Going up the up the fire pole instead of down? Nothing along those lines.
Nothing like that.
Okay. So. You just see a bunch of folks sitting around rooting on their football team.
Yeah, there's the college football games, but other than that, it's basically they have the online stuff, and I think one of the engine companies is doing the social media takeover, but nothing big like open house, unfortunately.
Gotcha. Well, and hopefully we won't have to see anybody in action tomorrow either.
We hope that as well. We hope that every day, but
yeah.
But people have other plans for us a lot of times.
Yeah, no kidding. The memorial in Old Town, somebody was a ditz. Was it just the spray paint, or was it a little bit more aggressive than that?
It was just the spray paint. There was some graffiti on the brickwork. It didn't really say anything. There wasn't a message or anything like that attached to it. More of just a tag. and then the paint on the actual monument itself. It could have been a lot worse, but honestly, it was bad enough that, you know, they take a sacred site to us like that, to our community, and these people that sacrificed everything for this community, and somebody just ignorantly does something like that. I can't fathom why, but you know, and I know that the community support, you know, in getting it basically restored back to normal, and with people offering rewards and everything, has been wonderful. But it's sad that we have to do that. Yeah. You know,
are there any cameras down there that could?
They're
thrown down onto it so you could see who the goofball was?
From our side of it, there's plans to put cameras down there, but obviously we haven't gotten to that point yet with the fundraising. And I know that with working with EPD, they've checked around, but I honestly haven't heard if anyone's gotten any footage of anybody doing anything. I'm not sure if there's any cameras that actually capture that area. So
I suppose that's moved up the scale on the priority side. Get a camera on somebody's building that has a clear shot just to
Absolutely.
Avoid it happening again.
Yeah, and you know, it's such a nice community space down there now, and to have somebody come in there and just again for no reason do something like that, it baffles me why. But I think that I guess to take the silver lining from it, I think the community awareness is right now kind of at a heightened.
Yeah, it keeps going up and up and up the more you hear about.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, if people see something, they'll say something, and I've walked down there. I'll, you know, you make a spin through there just to look at it and everything. And a lot of the people that are sitting around there, even some of the people that live in the area, are saying, you know, hey, I understand what happened. I'm keeping an extra eye on this place for you guys, and we appreciate that, you know, because there's a lot more eyes out there than just ours. So,
yeah, isn't that the case?
Yeah,
thankfully. So what's it going to look like in 5 years, other than the landscaping being a little bit more mature?
Well, hopefully we have cameras at that point. And, you know, hopefully my biggest hope for that is really no change. And when I say that is no names added to that monument. Hopefully the names that are on there now are the ones we ever have to add. Now, obviously, we have no way to prepare for that. But hopefully no change in that respect.
Yeah. You don't want to have the engraver coming out.
No, that's not something I ever want to see.
Yeah, no kidding. KINS, news and information time, unless it's a positive thing.
Oh, absolutely. If there's something that we can add to the monument to make it better, then I'm all for that.
The asterisk.
Yes.
It's 8:42.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with 3 airlines serving 5 destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humboldt Bay Fire. Bill, with some of the road construction that's going on and some of the activities, just the regular activities and then the results of some of the activities in the construction, how different is your guys' response? Are you using different routes now because of these things? I would think if 14th is blocked because of asphalt, is one of the main drags in town, it's kind of tough to use the main drag in town to get from A to B.
Yeah, the construction companies do a really good job about notifying our dispatch. If they're going to have roadways closed, they'll call our dispatch center and say, hey, we've got 5th Street closed between A and B. Or they'll give us basically the area where they've got it closed. And then our dispatchers are able to send that information. They'll basically announce it on the radio. And they also put it to each of our fire engines. We have a computer that's a mobile data terminal. And they can put that information there. So if they get in the engine to go responding someplace, one, the crews already have an idea that these roads are closed, and they can plan alternate routes that way. Because, again, you know, driving fire engines, if you get yourself wedged into a place where you shouldn't be, getting turned around is not as easy as doing it in your personal vehicle, obviously. So,
which sometimes isn't that easy by itself,
right?
Let alone a big boy truck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or the instant commander getting confused and then showing up 5 minutes late.
Right. Know. And yeah, and it's not just the response, but how we approach buildings. If where we want to place the fire engine to be most effective is blocked off, we have to have an alternative way where we want to insert that. You know, obviously the ladder truck is a big piece of equipment, and we want to basically typically we want to get that where we can use it the, you know, the most effectively. But if roads are closed and whatnot, we need to be know what our alternatives are going to be.
Now, do those get updated throughout the day as the crews work around, or will that call say be Henderson from F to California? That whole chunk is out.
They update it real time. Basically, once the work gets done and they open the road back up, they call up our dispatch center and say, "Hey, we're done."
So there's a lot of back and forth.
And even in, you know, like with 4th and 5th right now, they're doing a lot of the work in the evenings. They'll basically call dispatch at 3 a.m. and say, "Hey, the road's open again." They don't necessarily announce it on the radio because all the firefighters are asleep, but they when they get in the engine, there's actually an update on their mobile data terminal that basically says, "Hey, these roadways are open now."
Oh, so they just kind of hit a button kind of thing, and then that gets downloaded and into the system.
Tells them exactly in real time that this roadway is open now. So,
yeah, you don't want to be woken up by a bunch of emails throughout the evening. That wouldn't be too much fun.
And, you know, but that's also our, you know, we're used to that, too. If that's the way we have to do it to be most effective and know that the roads are open, then we're just fortunate we have some technology that helps us out in that respect, that we're not getting, you know, 50 phone calls a night, so.
Or sticky notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Are those bulb outs proving to be any kind of an impact to the guys as they're responding, or has there been enough time to kind of get a sense about that?
It hasn't, you know, I've not gotten any feedback that they've been an issue. Obviously, you know, there's a heightened degree of awareness with the construction workers there. Obviously, there's a lot of the construction going on. And as we're driving past those responding emergencies and everything, we know there's a lot more foot traffic because of the workers. The bulb outs themselves, I haven't seen or heard anything from our guys having an issue with it. But obviously, it's something to be aware of because that is a change in the conditions. And, you know, being someone who grew up in the community, it's been an adjustment for me to know that they stick out a little bit further. So,
yeah, I wonder if it was anything similar to when they made 6th and 7th one way instead of two ways. I mean, it's just so ingrained.
Right.
And ingrained, and now it's a conscious effort to remember.
Right. And I, the one I think of is Henderson coming into Broadway, where that used to basically
Get a couple interesting turns from that far right lane.
Exactly. And you still see that. And you have people that are just such creatures of habit. You know, they still make those turns when they shouldn't be making them. And I think the bulb outs are much the same. It's going to take people a little bit of adjustment time. So far, our people, knock on wood, have done
not alignment work. Time and adjustment time.
Right.
Yeah. I guess it's another thing.
Yeah.
You just have to get used to
it. One more thing to get used to, for sure.
When the signal lights get put in on F out by Grant, it's going to have one of those magic things where you guys can blow through there.
Yes.
Is there going to be that safety island still out there also, or does that disappear as part of this project?
That I'm not sure about. You're right. It will have the opticom system that basically emits a signal from a fire engine that makes the light change to green for us. But as far as the island goes, I don't know.
I would think it would be pretty tough if you had the stoplights and the bulb outs and the island. You know, maybe a motorcycle can get through there.
It starts getting pretty narrow,
yeah.
For sure.
During the construction periods for signal lights, it was on Broadway also. A couple lights got put in. Is that a challenge for you guys? Do you stay away from that? Or because it takes a little bit of time, everybody's kind of working together?
Everybody's working together, and we if it's the best response route, we don't stay away from it. We'll still basically use that response route and everything. But again, while the construction's ongoing, we have to be conscious of the workers. So.
Well, you don't sneak up on them either.
Absolutely.
Are those sirens, was it an ambulance or the fire truck that's louder?
Fire trucks are louder.
Okay.
For sure.
You know, it's one thing to hear them from inside the house. It's another one to be standing there as they come blasting past.
True enough.
Yeah, all right. Well, good hearing this weekend. See everybody on Monday.